everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about the show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/maxinethompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle @artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompson.com and MaxineThompsonBooks.com. I'm the author of novel The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel Hostage of Lies, short story collection A Place Called Home, best-selling e-books on Kindle, A Place Called Home, Secret Lovers, Never Knew Love Like This Before, All in the Family, and Proverbs for the People. All books are available nationwide or at my websites. The Hush Hush Secrets of Writing Fiction That Sells and The Hush Hush Secrets of Making Money as a Writer are available on Kindle on Amazon.com. Tonight's guest is a special guest. She is return guest. Her name is Dr. Michelle McGriff. She is a best-selling author. She is the author of 25 titles. She also is an entrepreneur and has several businesses. Good evening. How are you doing, Dr. McGriff?
I am doing great, considering it's sloppy wet outside here in Portland, Oregon, and it got dark at 3 o'clock and all that stuff that makes writing great if you're at home, but makes it lousy if you're commuting.
Yes, it rained yesterday, and I had a very productive day. I enjoyed yesterday. Yes, rain is the writer's, you can get into the zone real well.
Oh, it's a solace. It really is.
Okay, well, for those not familiar with you, Dr. McGriff, please tell them your story.
Well, let's see. I started writing. I've been writing all my life. And then in 1999, around there, 97 to 99, I got to thinking, I had had a terrible accident that had me home, and I got to thinking, what would be the next steps in my life? And through that pain, I thought, you know, I'm just going to write my way through. And I'd always written poetry and things like that. And so I started writing, and it just, you know, there was more there. There was a story there. So I started writing, and I, at that point, I remembered some of the books I had started writing when I was a teenager, which was Majestic Secret. And so I rewrote that, and then I didn't know what to do with it. So being more of an entrepreneur then than I am now, even, I thought, I'm going to find out what people do with books. So I went all the traditional routes, wrote Oprah and all that other good stuff, and found out about I think everybody does that once or twice when they're first getting started. I didn't know anything about the forums or the Internet. I didn't even have a computer. But I did the reading, and I just started going back to school to get my associate's degree. I was almost 40 years old, and I thought, I'll go back to school. I'll follow some of my dreams. And I'll write for a living, like I kind of thought I wanted to do. And I got hooked up with a couple of the book clubs. One in particular was RawSisters.com, and I found out how to self-publish, basically print on demand. And that's where I started meeting some authors. I met Gail Jackson Sloan, Saturday's Child, and a few other well-known writers that have stuck with it since then. And it turned into a lifestyle for me. And I just started pumping out those books. And I kind of wasn't really into getting a name for myself so much as I wanted to be read. I wanted my stories out there. It was exciting. It was fun. I was taking the criticism and asking questions. And long story short, the ups and downs and whole tornado of getting my foot in the door with the clubs and when people not realizing I wasn't a maniac, but I just was just me, just very real, and I'm still the same person that today as I am but then, and you know, weeding through the chaff, basically. And eventually, around 2004, I had finished you know, my series of Majestic Secret, and I had started on another book called For Love's Sake, and that's when I met a marvelous woman named Dr. Maxine Thompson. And I invited her to a book signing.
Yeah, I remember your email. And you say, where have you been all this time? And I said, where have you been when I went to your website and saw all the books you already had?
Exactly. So I was doing a book signing with my family in Los Angeles, California, and I invited Dr. Thompson to join me because that's just my spirit. I'm very open. It wasn't anything, you know, like, oh, I'm going to hook up with whoever. And because, I come from a family of very established people, so I've never been one to name drop or anything like that. I just like meeting people that are doing other exciting things just like me. So Dr. Thompson came, and we had the signing, and it was wonderful and fun, and she signed me as an agent, and I thought, okay. I had already had an agent at that time, and I didn't understand the business, so that was kind of a failed relationship. But Dr. Thompson was somebody also that could become a friend and teach me. So through her mentorship and writing more, the rest is history, so they say. Now it's 2011. I've got 25-plus books under my belt and many more under my pen and billions more in my head, and writing just a way of life. Now, as we all know, we were just talking about that before the show with a person who had a business that was controlled by the weather. Well, you can't control the weather. And just like with most people, we can't control the economy. We can't control anything. And so, you know, we've seen the literary industry take so many turns, ups and down. And so many writers have had to dig back into their psyches and their life and find something else to do. Well, with me, I had stuck with my education. I finished up my PhD at the start of this year, officially became Dr. McGriff. Whee! Oh, we had so much fun. I graduated and took some family to New Orleans, and we just had a blast. And I decided to hone in on that and kind of incorporate my writing with that, with some nonfiction work, maybe writing some articles based on my dissertation, which is based in diversity and women's in gender studies, more gender studies. And just kind of start kind of drifting back towards the entrepreneurship. I mean, I'm a little older now. I got to admit, I'm a little bit tired, you know, kind of wanted something a little bit more secure. But that's one thing about this system. There's nothing really secure. And so if you have the ability to think outside the box, now more than ever, unfortunately, you're going to have to do it. So I had to start thinking outside the box and pulling on some of the old things I used to know and some of the ways I used to support my family as a single parent and just kind of, as they say, get my hustle on. And so as this year is coming to an end, I've kind of accepted that. It was very hard. I know Dr. Thompson always says, and you call up whining, and I get all offended, like, I never whine. Well, I'm going to admit to it this year. This year I did some whining. And
the whole country was whining.
Everybody, so I don't feel drink. Bad. I don't feel
and
bad.
Like, ditto. This man, he said, I worked hard for 40 years. I'm ghostwriting his book. And I end up with nothing. And he's going to use the title From Riches to Rags.
Exactly. So with that, you know, when you have close friends and you know, friends and workmates and, you know, a partnership, like there's other authors I'm still close with, still with Gail Jackson Sloan, we're still close, and Sheila Goss and other writers that I, you know, and Jessica Corsier, I said her name right when I first met her, Jennifer Corsier, and different ones that have, you know, we've kind of rallied around to see what we can do extra. You know, jewelry making and website designing. And I know Candace Cottrell, she went from editor to website designer, back and forth, excellent work. And all of us have kind of gotten together just to kind of say, what can we do? And I'm thinking, I've got a PhD. I should be able to do something. And so, you know, sit back and really, even if I get a piece of paper and write down my skill set and put my skill set to work. And so instead of going out at this, you know, going towards the end of this year, not going to go out feet first, pockets flipped inside out, but to go out with a positive attitude, with my back straight, and saying, okay, I'm going to step up to the gate and go, here's what I have to offer. Let's go. And just like I did back in 1999 when I said, you know, I'm almost 40 years old and I don't even have an associate's degree. Now I just turned 52 and I have a PhD, and in January I'm going back for my second. So there's not a lack of energy and spunk and ambition in me. So I just need to buck it up, suck it up, and do it, you know. So that's kind of what I've been up to lately, is just kind of going, what next? I'm ready.
Well, Michelle, let's also say, when I get on you, you've gotten on me when I was at a down point, and I thank you for when my sister passed, how you were a really good friend. But you had to tell me, Maxine, you don't have every disease she had. You had to give me the figurative slap in the face. I was serious with you, so I know I've made you mad a lot. But I tell everybody, we all have to woman up now, or man up. You know, you're going to have to man up now and do what all you got to reach down and pull your, as my son used to say, you know the word for it, out your socks. You're going to have, as women, we're going to have to do what we got to do. We're going to have to sometimes do the roles of men, yet still try to remain feminine, but we have to do it.
Exactly.
We have to survive during this time. People survive. I'm writing memoirs for 90-year-old people, and I'm asking them, how did you survive the Depression? But they didn't have the high expectations. We're so spoiled as a nation. That's what's killing us. They just were happy to have their families, and they sold, and they stood in line and got cold and soup and did what they...
Yeah, they just wanted to, when they walked out of the house, to be able to see that person again, come back home alive. You know, they just wanted the basic stuff. Mm. And that's just how it is. And so, like you were saying, we have to kind of grab everything that we have and get our hustle on and put that pretentiousness aside. I mean, there was a time there when, yes, new writers, ethnic writers, urban writers, diversity, multicultural writers, we were the flavor of the month. Well, just as that implies, the month has ended. And so now that pretentious attitude needs to step aside, because it's just like the farmers, you know, Once the chaff falls away, the wheat's all that stands. And so if you weren't left standing, or if you got a little bend in your neck, you may have to move on and do something else additionally to make it through. And I don't have any embarrassment or I'm not recoiled by saying, oh, I didn't make it to the New York Times. That was one of my goals. Well, I can say I haven't made it to the New York Times yet. It's like... true writers don't die off. We don't retire. We just change what we write. And sometimes we even change our names. But we keep going.
In addition, books like fine wine, books can be made into movies 30 and 40 and 50 years later. So,
you never
know. Sometimes you're writing ahead of your time. One of the things I've always liked about your writing is it's deep and multi-layered, and so is mine. I think on a deep level, what I wrote 10 years ago is just now, and I'm seeing a lot of echoes of some of the things I had in No Pockets in the Stroud.
Exactly.
Because they have the following. Now, they're saying things I've been saying for years. I've told all types of family secrets, fathers not being the biological father of the child. So, you know, a lot of times, just because you don't get the recognition from people, sometimes you have to look at people as investments. Now, as far as the people I've invested in, I feel like I'm rich that way. I've seen writers, you know, really blossom. I could have just been like a lot of the writers that got their start at that time in 1997 and so, and just be about themselves. But
yes,
I'm a better person for that I did, and it was not my intent. I came off my job. I was ill and, you know, disabled, and I came off my job with the thing of, oh, I'm going to just write my books and this and that. And these opportunities with the Internet just kept opening up. First I was editing, and then I got into being an agent and the Internet radio show. Someone came to me first, asked me to do it because they saw my book reviews. And from there, you know, it's just been a lot of things. And now I have several companies that I work for, and I was proud to say that I got an email from Vicki Stringer yesterday where she said that Cash Money Content had contacted her for a reference. She said, I gave them a glowing reference because I have worked on about 10 books that are bestsellers that are under street fiction. So people thought because I worked on Carl Weber's books and books that were middle-class black, I didn't know how to do street. But a lot of the books that have sold year after year, I can't even call some of the names. They sold atrocious. But Mystery of the Game and Dirty Red, the three Dirty Reds, and one and two books in 2009 were in Publishers Weekly. One was Carl Weber's book I had edited that year, and the other was Vicki Stringer's book. So I have to see that as a calling. I can't even take credit from that. I know that that's all been from God. I could not have done that by my own energy.
Well, so many people misread.
A lot of us have to know that this is a spiritual thing when you're writing.
Yeah, so many people misread people. I know I had heard from someone years ago, and I was so stunned by what she said, I couldn't even be offended. And she called and she said, you know, everybody thinks you're stupid. And I said, really? And she goes, yeah, because you're so open and you laugh and you joke and you clown. And I didn't think so, but I had just something about you. So I actually called you. And she flattered me. You know, she said, you know, I see genius when I talk to you. And she's always said that about me. And I'm just like, I laugh even when she says that. But the point I'm making is that when everybody just thought that. And I know not even too long ago, someone popped up on the internet and said, you have a PhD? And I just laughed and went, yeah, because I've been the same person as I've always been.
But
so it's a piece of paper
better,
that I've acquired now.
It's better, Michelle, remember this, it's better for people to underestimate you. That happens to me. When I wrote No Pockets in a Shroud, my job was just looking at me, and my friend at that time told me, Lexi, you're giddy, you're silly. People don't think you, they don't really realize you think that deep. They think that because you laugh and silly that you don't think. And then I got a big wake-up call last week that might have landed me into my injury I had over the weekend. But it was where someone told me that I don't know how to do business. See, women, this is our first, second generation of women in business, and that I am too passive. But I done found relationships are what runs businesses. If you have offended someone and made an enemy and burnt bridges, I get most of my book deals based on, okay, we don't hear nothing about her not paying the writers. We don't hear nothing about, and then they're seeing writers' careers building. People who were rejecting me are telling me not some of the bigger houses. Well, I hope to be able to work with you soon, but it's because I've taken year after year of rejection. I was an agent for 2 years, but this person has told me they can, on December 1st, send their books out themselves. They think that it just happens like that.
Right. Well, just like writing. I mean, like you were saying, you know, I know I appear really square, and you and I have talked on the private about some of the things I've gotten into on a business level, but it's the same with being able to write. It's like, oh, Michelle, I think you're over your head with street fiction. Well, slap a new name on me, and I got street fiction out there, you know. And it's like, oh, Michelle, you can't write romance. Well, slap a new name on me, and we're going to see the romance out there. Michelle, I don't know if you're going to get those e-books out there. Well, slap a new name on me, and we're going to see some e-books popping up here pretty quick. And just like my name, Dr. McGriff, slap a new name on me, and I'm a scholar. It's like you just don't know what a person can do until they're called out, or you stop talking and you start listening to them and watching them and quit and take the mirror off yourself and realize, you know, I can do it, they can do it, we all can do it if we want to. Right. And people who think they can't do it, you can do it if you want to. You can do it if you want to.
The other thing is, Michelle, that people have to reinvent themselves in this economy. You are constantly reinventing yourself. If you were 40 years old, you could have said, well, I don't have to go back to school. But you did go. In my case, I call myself the Dr. Dre a little because I'm constantly reinventing myself. I found out from this clinic I go to, the young guy, the technician, was an aspiring musician, but he said when I told him about ghostwriting, he said, we have ghostwriters in the rap industry. We got ghostwriters for the beats, and we got ghostwriters for the words, and different ones use them. And, but he said, but Dr. Dre writes all his things. I say, so, you know, it's when you have a calling and it's something that you love, then I admire the 7 rules of success that Steve Jobs left behind. And one of them was passion. He said, we need more passionate people in the world because passionate people can make a difference. And I didn't realize he only took $1 a month for his pay, $1 a year, because he had so many stocks anyhow, because he loved what he was doing. When you love what you're doing, you'll do it for free. And I've done my free,
exactly.
And I'm getting ready to see my abundance now. I've done enough.
I think so, too. I mean, when I look back on the fact that, you know, I hear, you know, you got 25 books, why aren't you making a living off of it? And I think, you know, I will eventually, because this is my legacy. I'm in perpetuity. It isn't like I, you know, wrote those books and they have to do an immediate turnaround. They're not going anywhere. They're in perpetuity. They're going to keep going and going and going and gathering the snow until they become a big old snowball and run even me over. They're there forever.
Yes, and books have a lifetime, a shelf life that's like today in one of the books I'm working on, I'm saying I like opening lines to be memorable. I still like to quote, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. A Tale of Two Cities, Charles Dickens. How long ago was that written? Years ago.
Oh, forever. Forever.
And Christmas Carol, I think the opening line is, Marley had been dead for however long, you know. So opening lines are important. A lot of writers don't pay that attention, but I even look at each line because you're like, for each line within your paragraph, you're putting together a song. I saw a special this morning on Shakespeare, and my favorite actor, Al Pacino, was directing King Richard III. So I finally understood the War of the Roses came from then, and they were talking about the iambic pentameter that Shakespeare used. And so you have to pay attention to the rhythm of your speech when you write, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many elements to writing, and I find that in your books. I found a lot of surprise. I was shocked to find a lot of erotica in Dr. McGriff. Accident prone, and go read Blood Relations in a lot of her books. I was like, OMG, as the young people say. So, Michelle, let's talk about Accident Prone.
Okay, well, Accident Prone was another book that I had written quite some time ago. I actually wrote the book originally in 1994, I think. And I submitted it to a gal from another company. I thought I was going to self-publish it, and I didn't want to self-publish it until it had been looked over by a professional. And I had met a woman who was doing screenplays, and I thought, okay, well, let's see what we could do with this, you know. And this was long before Sleeping with the Enemy. A lot of my books came out a long time before the movies have come out. So a lot of my books look like copycats, where I'm so glad there's technology because you can prove my books were written when they were written. I mean, I wrote a book about test tube babies back in 1973. And now they're doing it all the time, where back then the publisher said it was way before its time and that would never happen. And now we see it every day. But anyway, And I still have the pencil writing, and I wrote it at 14. I still have the original manuscript written in pencil. Anyway, Accident Prone, I wrote it way back then, and it had a different kind of twist on it, a different turn on it, but a basic same story. And she said, well, it has a good premise to it, but it kind of drags, and it's got a marvelous romance in it, but it doesn't get to the point, and it's never going to sell. So put it to bed, and when the time is right, you wake it up and rewrite it. So this last year or so, it was time to wake the story up because I thought, well, it's already finished. It'll be a great story to get in print. And as writers, that's one thing I do want to recommend. When you're between contracts or between deals or between thoughts, don't stop writing. Even if you just jot down 1,000 words of notes with character names or what you want them to do, keep your files. Keep your files of stories because you never know when you're going to pick them up. Margaret Johnson Hodges taught me that when I emailed her when I first got started. She was a person that was open to talking to new writers, and she was a big name. I had read her book, and I loved it, and I'd read Butterscotch Blues, and I thought, oh, you know, I really, you know, I think, yeah, no, it wasn't Butterscotch Blues. Was it Margaret Johnson Hodges? Was it? Yeah, I think it was Butterscotch Blues. Yeah, and I contacted her. She had her email available, and I contacted her because I know it was Valerie Wilson Wesley and Margaret Johnson Hodges. Those were the two women that I just fell in love with when I read their work. And so I found their emails. I was new to the Internet, and I emailed them. I didn't know protocol, and I just emailed them and said, oh, I loved your book, and yada, yada, yada. And she sent me a hardback copy of a book. She goes, I'm going to send you my new book. And I was floored. She'd actually spoken to me, and she sent me a signed book. And she said, well, I always keep a bevy of books. I always keep story starters because you never know when a publisher is going to ask you for a book, and you're only going to get a couple of months to write it. And I thought, I'll never forget that. Okay, I'll never forget that. And when the time came and I became a published writer,
good piece I did of advice, Michelle. You're just going on. Let me ask you some questions. You're kind of going off the subject.
Oh.
Let's talk about the synopsis of Accident Prone.
Well, it's a book that I wrote a long time ago. The synopsis was I wanted to write a story about a person who everybody thought was dead, that, you know, maybe was, maybe wasn't, you know, that typical mystery. But I wanted to put my traditional twists and turns in there and make it funny, make it witty. And I've gotten into I created these characters along the way in my writing career, and I wanted to bring them back in this book. And so basically it had a subtitle on the book, but it didn't make it to the cover. And it's just called Accident Prone, The Death of a Porn Star. And I thought, so what if this person was a popular person who everybody thought was dead? How does a popular person just drop out of sight when they get ready to disappear? How do they do that? Mm-hmm. And that was the premise of this book. So an accident occurs. That's a questionable accident that kind of piques the police's interest. And they began to investigate, and secrets began to unwind as to what really happened.
Did you bring your two police characters back in?
Yes, I brought Jim and Lawrence back in again, following Margaret's advice. I brought back in characters that I created a long time ago, and I've kept them around when I need them, and whenever I need a police character, I bring them into the book. I try to keep things going that I can pick up later and use again. So with this, I kept characters that have been in several books. They got their start back in Deadly Tease, which was a dark erotic thriller, and everybody liked them. So I brought them back in Accident Prone, and I keep their personalities, and I keep them going, and they're in this story too.
Okay. Well, I know in the editing, the editor had you do a rewrite, and Natalie Woods is the one who drowned. I think that kind of came back up recently.
Yes, they're reopening that. She didn't really come to my mind when I first wrote the story, but as it started to redevelop, I did think about her. I thought about her. I thought about the movie Sleeping with the Enemy. I thought about the movie Enough with J-Lo that I just watched on Netflix the other day. And I thought about a lot of stories where there's a degree of abuse that people wouldn't assume would happen. When you see famous people like Aretha Franklin or ones like that, you wouldn't imagine she had such an abused life. Or Tina Turner, you know, they're such successful actresses. You wouldn't think they would subject themselves to such abuse. So in this story, you know, a woman who everyone thinks has it made in life, you know, is being abused and wants out. So how do they do it?
Okay. And you had the idea before some of the movies. I know you had one, Black Snake Moan, that we pitched, and then later it came out as a movie. Then
it came out 2 months later. I was like, oh, my God.
And then the Spy series, but I'm seeing that, too. That's why, see, there are a lot of ideas in the universe, and if you don't act on them fast, somebody else will. You know, it's like the it's like the talents. They said, okay, they gave this one, and he went and buried his, but the person who takes all their talents and use, and, I mean, you're really using your talents. But I think, we still have to raise the bar and really find our niche and find what
exactly
for us to do.
And one thing about it, a plan only works till it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
And so if you're, you know, if you've set the bar and you've reached it and you're doing whatever, raise it again. I mean, when you think of what's her name? She was a famous gymnast at 14. She was America's sweetheart.
Nadia Comaneci.
Yeah, Nadia Comaneci. And when she, you know, she reached the bar and she made it. And then once that 15 minutes of fame was over, they fade into black. Well, that's different for a writer. Your books are always there in perpetuity. So you can always, you know, once you reach that bar and you've got books out there, you can kind of go, okay, now what? And you just keep driving at it and driving at it and doing better and better and better.
And books can be, you can do about 50 things from one book, which could be teach classes. Now we can do webinars, you can do Skype, you can do meeting, go-to meeting type of things. You can use, they've got all the software for it. You can even do the tapes where you don't have to be there with the people when they listen to your webinar. They can just download. Of course, we know e-books. I mean, there are just so many ways. Books can open up your life where you can travel. People will pay. Dan Pointer has gone around, circled the globe about 6 times since he decided that there was a new model for books in 2005, and that it didn't take but about $500 to get you a good start on your book with print-on-demand and e-books. And he goes to South Africa, and if I can get through some of the vicissitudes of life, I plan to get back on that circuit, too. You could teach at colleges. Like for you, Michelle, you could get your books in colleges, you know, just find the
exactly
of what your books are. My doctor just told me that today when I was there. He just read L.A. Blues, and he's a, I just love how he's such an avid fan of mine. Now, when you have a fan, oh, this should be like The Wire, this should be, I say, yeah, I'm working on book two, and it's due on the 30th, which I don't think I'm going to make it, but it, you know, when you have readers that really connect, and he's the one who's giving me the ideas about, you know, the different things, the Latino-Black issue that goes on here in L.A. He was very, he said, you know, you'll tap a much bigger, wider audience, and I've been telling all the writers I work with, so here's one tip I'm going to slip and give out for free. We live in a multicultural world, and Michelle, you were writing multicultural when I read your first book, For Love's Sake, I think, or
yeah,
even the Majestic series. But for
I wrote Majestic Secret as multicultural back in 1973.
Right. Well, all your books have been multicultural because you were kind of in a white area in Northern California when you were growing up. Is that correct?
Yeah, I grew up in a very I grew up in San Jose. It was very Spanish. It was mostly Mexican, white, and black, and then you know, everyone intermarried, so it was very biracial and triracial. And so I didn't really meet white people or black people or anything, and we were always into discovering our roots and our races, and I found out about my heritage. And so we just never really looked at race for race. We looked at people and cultures, and so that's what I like to write about.
That, and then the new move, I think, is more international, if your books, because we've become a global society.
Oh, yeah, now they're getting, my books are getting international because of the studies I've done with globalization and whatnot. I'm totally fascinated with that.
You know, that's great, and we just have so many angles and places that we can go as writers. Well, Michelle, what advice would you give to new aspiring writers?
Well, I just advise them to, as always, to keep writing and to look for other avenues other than just the traditional avenue. I mean, times change. You cannot get stuck on the road. You have to change lanes now and again and see if you can move a little faster up the freeway. So, if you know, if you're banging your head trying to get an agent, trying to publish traditionally, you may have to find another way to go about it.
Self-publishing has become like the new Mavericks, and they're almost, didn't you say someone asked you yesterday, you mean you're not self-published, like you're not in the in crowd?
Exactly. Now it's hip to be, you know, self-published. I'm thinking, okay.
Yeah, I started out self-publishing when I started going to conferences, like the Baltimore conference and the different cruises. It was a kind of delineation between the self-published and the New York authors, and there was superiority, but I understand, because I know a lot of behind the scenes, that there have been a lot of people who, when they went in the boardroom, their little six-figure book deals were offered at 20 or 15, and so there's a lot of anger now. You know, a lot of people get renewed, a lot of authors that we knew in our circuit, you know, the African-American circuit, they're not out there. And they have a sense, to me, that's the craziest thing. I would take that platform and self-publishing run with. A lot of them act like, oh, now that they done turned me on, they just took us to the plantation and sold us out. No, I wouldn't feel like that. That would be the biggest business opportunity for me. I said, okay, I've had this national, I'll throw up my e-book.
Exactly.
And play off that. They've had a bigger exposure than a lot of the writers who've only been self-published.
Right,
A lot of them are ashamed. There's nothing to be ashamed of. If you have been laid off from your job, there's nothing to be ashamed of. Wall Street went broke. They had all the money. They had most of our money. So why are people walking around ashamed? So I'm glad that you brought up that issue. And that's what you and I both have in common. We're very open people. But you know what? I found the people who are fronting, Dr. Milligan always called them, they got fronts and no backs, you know, acting like they're got it all together. They got this big deal. They got this big business. And they don't even, you know, they're hiding the car from the repo man and all this other stuff. Sometimes we need to be honest, and then we can get help from each other. We can support each other, build resources, find out about things you can get on sale. But a lot of people want to act like, well, we have it all together. Well, I don't think anyone has it all together other than that 1% that are holding so much wealth right now. That everybody on Wall Street is complaining about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a biggie.
Yes, and that would be something to write about. I like to write. I wrote about Hurricane Katrina. I've written about the Detroit riots. I've lived through two riots, one when I was 16 and 67 in Detroit, and the other one here in L.A. I was actually working the streets as a social worker, and you got caught up in them. Because I went to work the day after the riot started. I look back now and say, why have I had such a crazy life? But it is the writers, is just all types of fodder for writers. So Michelle has moved around. I call you the gypsy. But
so does my family.
Writing. You are able, you have met so many people. Then you've got the college university background when you start working at the university. So writers need to live. And a lot of them say that you need to work different jobs. So some of the most,
and not all of them can move, you know, to Paris or whatever. I mean, even now I'm working a temp job, you know, and it's like first thing I did was look around at my coworkers and go, you know, I feel a story here. What if? And then I start telling them a story, and they're like, wow, you know. And my life's been a storyteller. I've been a storyteller since I can remember, and it's just the way it is for me. Everything I do is a story.
And your living in Portland has been a blessing because it isolated you from a lot of things and distractions. That's how you were so prolific. I remember when you had to write Colored Summer, how you locked up for a weekend and came up with about 60,000 words.
I'm ready to kind of move into some other things right now and get back to California, but I never will knock the 10 years I've been here in Portland, Oregon, because without it, I don't think my career would have gone where it went, and I wouldn't have accomplished what I accomplished.
Right, and I always say you were the replacement writer for a male writer who got that, and I'm going to write a article or blog on alpha males. I love alpha males, always have. But, you know, because I do not like men that are wimps. And I understand how difficult it is to be a man. I wouldn't trade being a woman for a man any day. But it's very difficult for women in business to work with men because they don't believe we know anything, and they don't want to listen to anything we tell them. So I even see a story there from just the experiences I've had, you know, because people say, well, she only has female clients. But it's always easier to work with females. It seems like no matter what happens with men, though, some of the men I've tried to sign, I didn't get the deal, or it fell through, or just something. So, you know, this is something that is new. It used to be men were the only ones that were the bosses. So for men, it's very difficult to have a female tell them anything. And I'm not a boss as an agent, but, you know, certain things I have to tell. I have to tell writers to rewrite things. I have to tell them, you know, this is going to get you kicked out, because if you start making enemies, I've seen, like I say, Michelle is actually sitting in a position of a writer who thought he was bigger than he was. But Michelle was always quietly, humbly doing the job and doing her work. So she ended up getting, I don't want to give out the amount, but double figures, some nice double digits up there. Because the other person was too big for the money. He said, that ain't enough. You know, so never be bigger than you think you're supposed to be. Just wait. Sometimes we jump too soon, ready to walk when we haven't built the platform enough.
Right, right, right. You know, and accept what's coming to you. You know, don't, I go say, oh, you can't take a compliment. Take a compliment. Take what's coming to you. If you really do deserve it. I remember reading one writer, I was reading a writing book, and he said, if you're a good writer, you'll get published. And if you get published and you stay a good writer, you'll get the recognition you deserve. It's like just that simple. You don't have to ask for anything. If you are what you are, it will come.
And it takes time, and it's not a thing, it's not no overnight. If you want to be an overnight success business, comedian, artist, but there's a saying that was in this movie, and it said, an artist is never broke. You're not broke because you're generally living a free life and you're happy. Like Michelle, you're not under the stress I was under as a social worker. Yes, I had the job that my degree, actually I had an English major, but my minor in sociology qualified me for, but I went through heck. I had babies I placed where the next day I get a call, the baby died. I still have nightmares over things. So sometimes to free your creative energy, you don't need a job that's real demanding. Nikki Giovanni has said you don't need brand new cars. That's how she's been able to be a poet and explore that. You know, she teaches, but I remember, and so I've always had used cars since I left my job.
Yeah. I always say that I was kind of, you know, when you first get that paycheck, I did a vlog on that the other day. And I said, you know, when I got my paycheck, my first thought was to go, oh, my God. But then I stopped and said, but did you sleep last night?
Yes.
Well, you know what? Did you think about your job after 4 o'clock? Okay. No. Well, you know what? You earned just enough.
I carry boxes of files home with me to stay on. And this business here, being in the publishing industry, as long as it's fun to me, I'll stay in it. But last week, I almost was ready to throw the towel in because if it's not going to be paying, number one, I'm not going to be aggravated, and I'm broke. No. You know. And I don't expect, this is the only thing I don't like I see in writers, and I've heard it with actors. I know writers and actors are fickle sometimes, but one thing I've found with the writers I've worked with, they're grateful and appreciative, but some are not, and those are the ones that fall away, you know, and that's okay, because when they first come to me as, I'm giving up my energy that could just be going into my career when I'm stopping to write, to look at your book, I read it, sometimes edit the first 50 pages, 100 pages out of, and I'm not charging you as the agent, then sending you out and all that, that's time consuming. And for someone to say, like, you ain't did nothing, because, no, I'm not going to hold your hand. You have to still carry your career. This is, the publishers aren't holding your hand now. They're not even promoting you. I'm giving information to help people promote.
Exactly.
I have a show as a platform to help people promote. As I learn, I share information. I'm trying to bring all the writers I work with to a level of being really good writers and fast writers, because the faster you write, the more books you can have out. I encourage writers to put out e-books. I don't want a percent of the e-books. That's their money, you know. So this, to me, has to be a thing. I cannot work with ungrateful people, because ungrateful people, no matter what you do for them, will turn around and say you didn't do anything.
Right.
That's
right.
Just going to be my new thing, because at first I was just ready to say I'm not going to be an agent at all. And then the sweetest guy came to me who restored my faith in male humanity again. And, you know, and he was on the same page, does conferences, is a writer, ghostwriter, you know. So it was like, I said, I can't give up doing, but I am going to enjoy myself and set boundaries. And if people don't like, then they can find someone else. Because I was really surprised to find that there are several writers that are with really big-name agents who haven't gotten book deals in a couple of years. I can't believe it. So yeah. this whole system has changed. It's not like it was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That I've even seen in a short time that, you know, I mean, I've been a lifetime writer, but, you know, I've only been professionally writing for about 15 years. And I've kind of sat back and watched some things, and then I've kind of been involved in some things. And I just see so many changes. And you could, it's like a business. You could stress out over this loose sleep and make yourself ill. Or you can sit back and learn from each change that occurs and adjust the way that you go about doing things.
You can't get upset. You can't take it personally. You have to detach. I don't take it personally. When I make calls and editors don't call me right back, I don't take it personally. It's not a personal. This is business. Now, you know, in The Godfather, I always say, this isn't personal, it's business, but you always find it was personal. And they would. But in this business, I found it's not personal because then out of the blue, maybe 6 months later, I'll get a call. I was thinking about you. I know I had you on the list to call you back. And I got this book deal, that book deal, this book deal, boom, boom, boom. So I'd rather people pick up the phone when they do call, making some deals and negotiating some, putting some money in my pocket and the writer's pocket versus somebody answering the phone all the time and don't give you nothing. I always go by action. And that's what the world, people look at what you do. There are three types of people in this world. I always read that. People who watch what's happening, people wondering what happened, people who making things happen. And you want to be the one who makes things happen. You know, don't stand around, oh, well, nobody give me a book deal. Well, that's no excuse. That's a cop-out for a writer. Now, you can get on this internet and study up on how to self-publish and make a decent living with an e-book.
Because as an e-book, that doesn't mean the book isn't going to get published. You've published it already. It can still get picked up, and you can expand on it and make it a full novel. Nobody expects you to put a 100,000-word ebook out there and sell it for 99 cents. Ebooks these days are like chapbooks. Put quick 30,000 words, 40,000. You can do that in a weekend if you want. Put out there, it's kind of a teaser with a nice rounded plot, good closure, but leave enough to where there's enough to build on, because if the book is interesting, if there's enough of a story there, it can get picked up.
Right. And the people who are doing really well with the e-books, like John Locke, he sold 1 million e-books in 5 months. And I bought his e-book to see, you know, what he did. But it was that he did all the traditional things, which did not pay off. And then he did the blogs, the Kindle groups. They have a lot of groups on Kindle where they're talking about this, that, and other. And, you know, the LinkedIn and Facebook, and that's how his book sold. And now he hit the New York Times as a self-published writer, and I love what he says. No one told Microsoft, you're a vanity business because you're investing in your own business. When you self-publish, you're investing in yourself, and that is the route that Dan Pointer has been doing for since the 70s, and I contacted him in 1990. And I laughed when he came on my show. I never forgot. He said, I hit the New York Times once when I had a book deal with New York, but I didn't make as much. I made more money. He's always made his money self-published in all our nonfiction books.
I'll never forget. I had a teacher that told me once I was not a commodity. And I was speechless. And I thought, you're a marketing teacher, but you don't understand commodities. You don't understand without the writer, there's no story. And I thought, okay, we are our own product.
Right. We're the writer for TV scripts, for movie scripts. Writers are the route that pays the agents, the managers, and the other businesses. It takes songwriters to write songs for the singers. Mostly singers don't write their own songs. It takes the writer. The writer is the dreamer, person able to put the words down that other people are thinking and afraid to say. One thing I found about being a writer, you're going to be quirky, you are a little eccentric, a little different, and you need to be, because it doesn't take anything to be an average Joe in this world. You want to stand out. You want to have your voice heard. And I told the writer today, that's the problem. We're adulating all these and idolizing and glamorizing celebrities, but it's the average person who has made America great. We're the unsung heroes, And I want as many people to write their books. So if you're interested in writing your memoir, it could be 30,000 words. Please contact me at maxpho@aol.com. That's my little plug for that, because I'm really finding a new niche. We have all these people with stories to tell, and the people who have lived through the Depression, they need to tell young people, hey, you don't have to jump off a bridge. You can make it. We made it back then. They had 6 and 12 children and families, and they made it. And we can make it today. We just have to find a new way. We cannot do business as usual. This is a new day and time. Well, Michelle, please give a few more parting words. We're coming up close to the top of the hour. Give out your website and all your titles.
Well, my website is under construction right now, but it's michellemcgriff.com. Really easy to find, michellemcgriff.com. I'm a heavy user of Facebook, so you can find me on Facebook. I've almost reached my limit of 5,000 friends, so I'm pretty avid on there. I Twitter all the time, so McGriff M, I think it's M McGriff M on Twitter, but you can find me. I'm on quite a few people's lists. My titles are a 5-book series of the Majestic series, Majestic Secret, A Style of His Own, Arrested Memories, and Destiny Song, and Temporary Rain. I did For Love's Sake, and the series that followed suit on that with Feels Like Falling, and Obsession 101, and Black Blood Relations. I did T.L. Gardner, and I did a book called Legend of Mourning. I did a conglomeration of some short stories, Fifth Floor and other short stories. Now my new books are, what is it, Deadly Tease, and then I've done Accident Prone, and Blood Relations is part of the series with the Love for Love's Sake. And then, anthologies. The Secret, A Secret Lover. I'm over at my bookshelf now. Secret Lovers, Never Knew Love Like This Before. And then I did Last Breath. Oh, and then my spy series, Swerve. That's the first book in my spy series. It's going to try to have 4 or 5 books on there. I do have a pen name, and with that pen name, I've written 4 books under that, Westin Girls 1 and 2, 3 books, 1 and 2, and then OG. I think I got them all.
Oh, my goodness. So, see, and this is all while you were getting your PhD and helping with grandchildren. And that was when I realized, I said, you know, women are so resilient. We just, it's like, we're like buckwheat. The strong wind blow, we lay low to the ground, and then we don't break like fine wheat. We just snap back. The wind has gone over. And that's what you have to be as a writer. You have to be tough-skinned, lay low. Like right now, the wind is blowing strong in the publishing industry. Things are going, but you can still find, you can be like the cockroach. The dinosaur did not survive the ice ages, but the cockroach did.
The cockroach will survive a nuclear warfare. And if you got to cry, cry. Just remember that. You got to find some good friends in this business. They are out there. Not everybody's trying to cut your throat and stab you in the back. Find a good friend, one that you can cry with, drink with, laugh with, and they're not going to tell anybody what you did. And it's a good life after that.
Yes, and, Michelle, and when she came down for her different parts of her dissertation or where she stayed in hotels and was down this way, we've gone to lunch, and then when I think of you now, I think of you being at dinner at Christmas at my house, when my last Christmas with my sister, because she passed, a couple of months later, and she knew she was sick then. She wasn't even her general effervescent self. She was very kind of low-key when you met her, but I just, so I always think of that this has been more than just a business. But when it's business, I do get business on you. But basically, you...
Oh, yeah.
I was saying, yeah. So when you go get your book, Michelle.
Exactly. I have Maxine listed as my sister on Facebook. It's been a very good friendship. But that's what I'm saying. Find people who can be your friends as well as business partners to where you can trust them.
Right.
You know, and it makes it just a life.
Okay, well, we're at the top of the hour. Everyone have a happy holiday, and thanks so much, Michelle. Dr. McGriff, for coming on the show. Please go out and get Accident Prone. the Kindle version is doing really well.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, yes, I've got it on Kindle. But I want my print copy. Have you gotten your author copies yet?
Yes, I did, and I will send you a copy.
Okay, thank you very much. It's a beautiful cover, too. All right, well, the best of everything, and just keep writing, and I'm sure we're going to see some more books and some more in that spy series from you.
Oh, definitely.
All right, well, good night, everyone. I will be off for a couple of weeks, but I will return and see you when I get back. Love you all, and be safe.